The Final Edition Radio Hour is a work of satire intended for people who own books, gentrify neighborhoods, and say they like kale. Please consume responsibly, the satire, that is.
Hi, I'm Jeff Chrysler.
And I'm Tony Hendra.
And this is the Final Edition Radio Hour. Coming up, a riveting hour of satire with teeth.
I'm still on my mission to run that long sack of human sewage, David Koch, out of New York. You know Koch whores are responsible for restrictive abortion laws in Texas, stand your ground and voter suppression laws in 30 states?
Tony, we get it. You hate Koch. You've had a Koch and a frown. You want to kill the world of Koch. But we have a show to do.
But why does New York allow this troglodyte to fund the New York State Theater for the Arts and the Metropolitan Museum and that jewel in the crown of PBS, WNET? Koch is our sworn enemy, but New York licks the dog shit off his boots every day.
Tony, I know, but there are more pressing things happening. I mean, we've got to do bits, comedy bits, satire bits, funny bits about Ebola and elections and gay marriage and Halloween.
Why did New Yorkers elect David Koch's second cousin, Ed Koch, mayor, and then re-elect him, and then name a bridge after him? The Koch brothers have a bridge in New York.
Tony, there is real income inequality plaguing the 1%, advertisers are getting fired, and Gutisman and Jew have something important to say.
Did you know that the first husband of the Koch brothers' mother, Ilsa, was the commandant of Buchenwald? Ilsa made lamps out of murdered prisoners' skin. Calling these people filth is deeply offensive to filth.
Tony, Ed and Ilsa Koch were not related to the Koch brothers.
Name's the same. Go back far enough, they're all related.
Aren't we all, Tony? I mean, aren't we all? Yes, loyal listeners, you have all this nonsense and more ahead of you on
the Final Edition Radio Hour.
A Voter's Guide to the Midterm Election. The midterm election is unlike any election you've ever voted in, because you're one of those people who never vote in a midterm election. Long story short, that's why you're stuck with a congressman who speaks in tongues. So, welcome to the only really important election you've ever voted in. First, look at the ballot for city council. What do you notice?
I don't have a clue who any of these people are.
No, you don't. And that's too bad, because one of them is a convicted child murderer.
Really? How did he campaign?
He didn't. He's in prison, but he's still going to get at least 3% of the vote because he's pro-gun.
So am I.
Next on the ballot, a bond issue.
Oh, got it.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay, tell me what a bond issue is.
You issue a bond?
You have no idea.
No.
And yet you're going to decide whether we do it. In a bond issue, the state or city takes out a huge loan to pay for some major project. In this case, they want to borrow more than $7 billion for water supply infrastructure projects. So you're going to respond in one of two ways. Either A,
I'm going to vote for this because I don't understand this, so the hell with it.
Or B,
I'm going to vote against this because I don't understand this, so the hell with it.
Either way, great choice. Finally, who do you want for county commissioner? There's some guy named Culpepper, and there's some guy named Prance. Or Prance. I can't even pronounce this.
What's the difference between these guys?
Yeah, basically, they take bribes from different people. Aside from that, one is a Democrat, so he gives you no reason to vote for him. And the other is Republican, so he doesn't want you to vote at all.
Who do I pick?
We're paying you to vote for Prance. Or Prance.
Got it.
Great! Here's your $20 and a pint of Jim Beam.
Woohoo!
Now let me drive you back to the docks where we found you. The Final Edition asked the man on the street, what's your opinion of Catholic bishops saying that gays and lesbians have gifts to offer?
Bishops for queens? What are we playing, chess here?
One thing I've learned as a gay person in the church is that bishops can only move diagonally.
In the name of the Lord and all the Mary and the Jesus and all...
I bet those gifts were very tasteful.
I think it's great they're finally going to allow gay people into the Catholic Church.
Well, I certainly wouldn't mind if a gay man gave me a gift. It's my birthday.
I think we need to define our terms here. What exactly do they mean by gifts? and does it involve cradling the balls?
And now the final edition's finance feature, Money or Die. Income inequality. It means one thing. You are poor. No matter who you are, what you do, where you live, who loves you, or how much money you have, you are poor. Poor, poor, poor. That's the conclusion of a new study by the Center of If You Have to Ask, You Can't Afford It at the University of Monaco. The report claims that the gap is widening between America's rich and super rich. The top 0.1% of Americans are now so wealthy that the bottom 0.9% are living in comparative poverty. It's an income gap that has created a dangerous tension. This is Atherton, California, a typical town with a median home value of $4.6 million. A serene world where cultures collide. To the left are the squalid homes of doctors, lawyers, and accomplished professionals. Meager gardens, two-car garages, Olympic pools, uninspired artwork lining modest foyers, and elaborate security systems that seem unnecessary. To the right, along the same one-mile stretch of road, one house for the family of a venture capitalist. Their wet nurses have nannies and their butlers have manservants, but all is not well. They're deeply troubled by the presence of so many poor so very nearby. Meet John and Mary Ravenhawk. Their concerns echo those of the average American billionaire.
At first, I wasn't comfortable being around those people. Doctors and lawyers and that sort. With their salaries and tax payments. It's like they're a different species.
But I've made him see that they add culture. They're gritty. They're ethnic.
Oh, it's just hard sometimes. The other day, my daughter asked me how the Schwartzes keep Bengal tigers in such a small yard. I didn't have the heart to tell her that they can't afford endangered species, so I said they'd been killed on safari for fun. And it wasn't even the season.
I used to get sad thinking about how their six figures can't even provide simple things we take for granted, like a replica of Indiana University's basketball court, or FDR's presidential papers.
Yeah, it's their own fault, really. They could have run a hedge fund, or sold a website, or raided a corporate treasury. But no, they had to go to school, study, work hard, progress steadily to the top of their professions, and save the world. Serves them right.
Whatever our different feelings towards our less fortunate neighbors, we both agree we've got a responsibility to help. Which is why we've started a charitable foundation for our less fortunate neighbors.
We really hope it will increase our property value.
Manuel! Luis, get those hedges trimmed! And clean the pool, for Christ's sake!
As for the objects of their charity, what's it like for these new poor to fruitlessly pursue the American dream, devoid of hope and mired in failure? And what do they think about those who would help them? This is Barry Schwartz, senior partner at a prestigious Palo Alto law firm, and a proud man.
We don't need pity. Don't feel bad for us. We've got a nanny and a cook. But no, we can't afford permanent staff. What if someone wakes up in the middle of the night needing an omelet? They'll survive. I guess we should feel lucky. My 2.5 kids will still go to prep school and Stanford and, I guess, Yale Law. Ugh. They'll be comfortable. If a trust fund that only buys real estate can be called comfort, I appreciate the Ravenhawks' efforts. But no, we don't want handouts.
That's why we're not just giving these people money. They're like citizens of a third world country. We've got to teach them lessons. Give a man a fish and all that.
Our charity challenges them to learn to live like real Americans. Life lessons. For instance, we're giving the Schwartz's neighbors, the Brewsters, $30 million. If they spend
all of it in 30 days without telling anyone why, we'll give them $300 million to keep. If they can't do it, they gets nothing.
Mary and I have a little bet about whether or not they'll make it. I'm looking forward to winning my dollar back after that whole fiasco with that black man in Philadelphia.
You know, we're okay. The Rolling Stones sang, "You can't always get what you want, but sometimes you'll find you get what you need."
They sang that because they were poor.
If you spend most of your time quarantined, you know how hard it can be to find that special someone who shares your life-changing symptoms. Welcome to Weebola, the first and only dating service for those recently diagnosed with the Big E. Here at Weebola, we promise to match you with that perfect person who, like you, is sick and tired of the game and ready to lock themselves down with a soulmate who will make those knots in your stomach feel like butterflies. Here to share their testimony are Texas patients 4 and 7, together since September 2014.
When I first saw her picture, I could tell she was hot. And I was right. A perfect 105 degrees.
You'd think after 6 weeks the excitement would wear off, but every time I look into his deep red eyes, I get those same old chills running down my spine.
And every time I look at her, I just want to put my antibody into her antibody.
He kills me.
And the best part about Weebola is that we are the only dating service that can guarantee immediate exclusivity.
I don't have to worry about anyone stealing my man.
That's right. My bleeding heart belongs to her.
And my bleeding eyes belong to him.
Weebola. Life sucks, and then you meet someone, and then you die.
The Final Edition Radio Hour will be right back.
Welcome back to the Final Edition Radio Hour.
And now a word from our sponsor.
Obama is a Nazi!
Obama's a socialist.
Ebola is the president's fault.
Obamacare will kill us all!
Tired of all the confusion about the current conspiracies? Have we got a book for you? Presenting the Presidential Haters Handbook. We connect all the dots so you don't have to.
Oh! Obama is a gay Nazi! Married to Rahm Emanuel.
Oh, Obama's an anti-business socialist. Got it.
Oh, Ebola is a distraction from Benghazi.
I see. Obamacare is part of the ISIS threat.
That's right. All the things you thought about the president are true and interrelated. It's all in this handy, easy-to-read book with plenty of pictures. For your copy, send $16.99 check or money order to Haters Handbook, 1579 Kildarkey Street, Whitey, Alabama, 30922. And remember, it'll be a White House again in about 2 years.
Boss, you wanted to see me?
Yeah, Lou. Come in. Have a seat.
Look, if this is about a raise, I'm all for it.
Lou, you've been our chief marketing strategist at Apex Amalgamated for a while now.
Food and consumer products. I'm a legend in this industry.
Right. Lou, we gotta let you go.
What? You can't do this!
There's just been too many snafus, Lou. We took a real chance on you a couple years ago. You hadn't worked in the industry for decades. You were blacklisted.
That was discrimination against someone with AIDS.
Lou, you didn't have AIDS.
I had a garage full of it. Still do. You try unloading that stuff.
Lou, you had AIDS appetite suppressing candy from the 70s and 80s.
I created that campaign. I came up with the AIDS name.
Exactly. It was a disaster after the AIDS epidemic hit.
I named it years before the disease even existed. Nobody could have known. It ruined my career, and it wasn't my fault.
We know. We know. So we took a chance on you. But everything you've done has gone wrong.
Like what?
Like what? For starters, there was the breakfast cereal name fiasco.
Ebola Crunchies? That's a brilliant name. Nobody could have foreseen the events of the past few weeks.
Lou, Ebola has been around for decades. You should have Googled it. I mean, it was identified by the World Health Organization back in the 70s.
And they never took out a trademark on the name. We're in the clear. The ad campaign is going strong.
Yeah, give your kids Ebola. Our billboards have caused traffic accidents, Lou. And what about that mascot, the little pygmy that runs around saying, "They're after me, Ebola Crunchies"? It looks racist.
That's why he has an Irish accent. Look, I've done other campaigns. I launched two lines of soups.
Chock full of cholera and New England chlamydia? Guess what? They're not selling.
They need better shelf placement. Give me another chance. I got a new product line ready to go. The line of pre-prepared Oriental dishes.
The preferred term is Asian, and again, the name is offensive.
What? Ray Rice entrees? It rolls right off the tongue. I didn't know about the football player. That's pure coincidence.
Lou, your slogan for Ray Rice entrees is, "Bitch was asking for it."
Yeah, asking her grocer. Come on, boss. Look, maybe if I get away from food products.
Like this jingle you wrote for our aftershave product? I got it on my computer.
By Manon Jitis.
Get out, Lou. Just get out.
Yeah, well, I'm taking my idea for the margarine products with me.
Lou, just leave. Take the stupid margarine.
Fine. He'll come crawling back, begging me to let you market ISIS spreads.
Here at the National Denier Service, we get a lot of questions about Ebola. Is it transmitted through the media? Is it airborne? Is it on the airborne? Is it Kelly Osborne? Can you catch Ebola from Fox News? If I miss Ebola during the day, can I set my DVR and catch it later? If Ebola helps the Republicans take the Senate, will they change their name to Epublicans? Which is worse, Ebola or the Koch brothers? Are the Koch brothers one virus or two? Has Ebola knocked ISIS off the front pages? Are Americans less afraid of being beheaded than they are of being vomited on? If we can put a man on the moon, why can't we make a hazmat suit that doesn't leak? Where do you buy a hazmat suit? At Today's Hazmat? Will Matt Lauer change his name to Hazmat Lauer? Are we at war with Ebola? How do you fight a war against a virus? With very small drones? To beat Ebola, do we have to put e-boots on the ground? What do people hate more, Ebola or e-cigarettes? Which is worse, Ebola or Ebano? Will they team up to put an annoying virus in everyone's iTunes? If Obama changed his name to Ebola, would his approval rating be higher? If Ebola ran across the White House lawn, opened the front door, and vomited on Obama, would it become a socialist? At the National Denier Service, we don't have the answers to your questions.
The National Denier Service. We don't have the answers.
Daddy, will you tell us a scary Halloween story?
Oh, kids, I don't know any scary Halloween stories.
Please!
All right, kids. Get ready for the story of Neil Young and the Younger Woman.
Ooh, who's Neil Young?
Is he a monster?
Well, his wife thinks so. But in this story, the monster is called Daryl Hannah.
Ew! Is he ugly?
Daryl is a she. And no, she's attractive by conventional standards of Hollywood beauty.
So, why is she the monster?
Would you let me tell the story? Once upon a time, there was a gentle Canadian pot smoker named Neil Young. He lived on Sugar Mountain.
With the Barkers?
And the color balloons?
You know any other Sugar Mountains? Now, on Sugar Mountain, you can't be 20. So he moved to Laurel Canyon, where he joined Buffalo Springfield. Stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody, look what's going down.
What's going down, Daddy?
Those are just the words to their only hit.
Yes, but as children of today, we're not used to lyrics with meaning.
Can you tell us a One Direction story?
Shh! After that one hit, Neil left the Springfield and joined Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Were they monsters?
Well, Crosby was. Once he almost cut his hair. Anyway, Neil did one album and left.
Neil did a lot of things just once. Sounds like he was a monster.
No. He was a miner for a heart of gold.
He worked in a gold mine?
No, it was a hippie metaphor. Heart of Gold was the biggest mellow rock song of all time. As soon as it hit number one,
Neil abandoned the genre.
What happened to the genre, Daddy? Was it filled by monsters?
Yes, girls. It was filled by the Eagles.
Ew! Wasn't it also filled by Linda Ronstadt?
They started as her backup band.
Ew!
Meanwhile, Daryl Hannah took up with Jackson Brown. He was running on empty.
Running blind?
Running into the sun, but he was running behind.
Did he even know what he was hoping to find?
Can I finish, please? This is a Halloween story, not a VH1's Behind the Music.
Ew!
Neil kept jumping from CSN to Crazy Horse to Pearl Jam to Nashville to MTV Unplugged. By the 90s, critics loved him again, and his refusal to stick with one thing became an asset.
Yeah, right. What do you even call that?
It was called creativity.
Oh, come on. There's no such thing.
If creativity exists, how come there isn't any now?
Yeah, why isn't Taylor Swift creative?
Or Rihanna.
Or Maroon 5.
Kids, for 36 years, Neil was married to Peggy. He wrote a song about her.
Somewhere on a desert highway, she rode a Harley Davidson?
Do you want to tell the story? Anyway, she sang backup, he produced her solo albums, they raised two kids, and started The Bridge School. And then, at the age of 68...
What did he do?
He left her for Daryl Hannah!
Why would Neil Young leave his wife for the announcer on SNL?
That's Daryl Hammond. Weren't you paying attention?
Daddy, I did not like that story.
It was too creative. Can you tell us one that's more believable?
Okay. Once upon a time, there was a young corporate superstar named Taylor Swift. She was the embodiment of her demographic and couldn't keep a boyfriend for more than 6 minutes. The end.
Yay!
With luck, we'll be back with more of the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Look out! There's more Final Edition Radio Hour!
Hi, this is Tony Hendrick. Last month, while dining with my old pal, Terry Jones, that's the Monty Python Terry Jones, not the mustachioed, Koran-burning bigot from Florida, I met two very funny and unusual young men. Goodisman and Jew, that's J-O-O, Kyung Ki Ju is Korean, belong to a rarefied and splendid tradition which includes, amongst others, Victor Borge and Dudley Moore, classical musicians with an abiding and glorious irreverence about classical music. They passed through New York this week, and I jumped at the chance to get to know them better.
I'm here with Kyung Ki Ju. Is that correct?
Pretty close. Yeah? Kyung Ki.
Kyung Ki.
Yeah.
Okay. And Alexei, I can't say your last name.
Alexei Igudesman.
Igudesman. How would you guys describe yourselves in two words or less?
Well, we're musicians. We're classically trained. And we also love comedy and theater.
I think a tagline could be Mozart meets Monty Python.
Okay.
Or South Park
meets
Bach.
Yeah.
South Park meets Bach. Something like this. I mean, we... South Bach meets Park.
Yes.
No, just South Bach.
So in other words, it's either Mozart Python or South Bach.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. And two words. You could have said that right at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Saved us
now
a lot of time.
Now we know. You learn something every day.
You learn every day. Right. I mean, basically, we are passionate musicians. We love music. Essentially, we are, in our hearts, we are musicians. But we're also very passionate about humor and about the theater. Why we separate theater and humor is because they're two different things.
Thank you.
Let's just ask the obvious question, yes. Which is that for most people, classical music is incredibly serious, right? For many, it's incredibly dull. Not for me, luckily. Mm-hmm. But it is a very serious pursuit, and it is pursued seriously. What do you feel you draw out of classical music that's comedic?
So all this kind of elitist ceremony that surrounds classical music and right. classical musicians, that just has absolutely nothing to do with the music.
It's entirely redundant, actually, in many ways, because the music itself, it can be serious, but often it's not, if you think of Mozart, of Beethoven. It's just because it's presented in such stiflingly serious manners these days.
It wasn't like that at the time.
Exactly.
Like,
that's why people think it's serious. But actually, there's so much humor. There's humor in Bach. There's humor in Haydn, especially, in Mozart, in Beethoven. Basically, at the time, the practice of performing at the time was much more open than these days. At the time of Mozart and Beethoven, people used to play separate movements. They used to chat in between. They were used to tell sometimes jokes, for example.
Well, Mozart would improvise cadenzas. Right,
there was a famous right. letter from Mozart to his dad that said, "My God, I just played the first theme for my new concerto. They loved it so much. They applauded so much. We had to start again, like a rock concert." If these days, if you start applauding in the middle of a symphony, they'll shoot you.
Oh, yeah.
Probably in the concert hall. In Texas, they'll shoot you. But, certainly this is something we are really trying to change, because in our performances, when we go out as Igudasman and Jew and do one of our various shows, one of them is called The Little Nightmare Music, for example, we have things we perform seriously as well, but many things that it doesn't require laughter, but usually it brings laughter with one. And so the audiences tend to respond much more spontaneously, to clap and right. to just, I don't know, it just seems much more of an organic process to go to a concert hall to have a good time, rather than to go there and to either sleep or
mourn the death
of something, I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
You're trying to sort of recharacterize classical music in a way. You're actually doing well-known familiar pieces, but you're doing them in ways in which people have never heard them, but it is the piece.
Yeah, we look at different angles of it, for example. Right. It's often actually arrangement and often even just our own take on it. And the humor is actually, it's just a byproduct in many ways. So when people come to our performances, we don't just have musical geeks going there like, "Oh, I know, that's an F sharp instead of an F." Oh, very clever. Not right. at all. We have kids, people who have no idea about music. So we try to write on different levels, even though in this piece, for example, we do have certain characteristics we change about the piece. The introduction.
Yes, but it doesn't matter if you know, we exactly. change it from A minor to A major. And you don't have to know what minor major means. It's so obvious when you hear right. it. And of course, we add some visual happy faces or whatever. But it's so clear. This one is minor, kind of a bit sad down, and the other one is major. And people hear immediately the difference. And I think the people who also don't know about what minor major is, I think they feel kind of a bit proud of themselves that, "Oh, I get that joke." So it's really for everyone.
Yeah. Right.
Sorry. Could we play this today in A major?
No. Well, it's Mozart alla Turca in A minor, so you can't really play it in A major because it's
yes,
in
I
a
know
different
that,
key.
But look where we are, man. Yeah. We're at the WGBH studios in Boston.
And?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, here it's like, you know, it's New England. It's all the new energy. It's, you know, the new world and everything. It's everything is much higher, it's more positive, and you know what? The feng shui here is A major. Come on, play an A major.
Oh, come on, what is it?
I'm so sorry to do this on radio. What? Sorry. Look, it's just, it's better. It's better,
yeah.
But it needs to sound more oriental. More Turkish, Arabic, Jewish, Hispanic, Indian, Asian, Chinese. Yeah? You know, like yin yang, tai chi, sing tao, ping pong.
I don't think I quite get what...
Okay. Your bees.
My bees.
Yeah, your bees.
My bees.
Your bees.
My bees.
No, the note B.
Okay, yes.
Which you play.
Yes, what about it? Yes.
It's too high.
Too high. Yeah?
This is where you feel your bees.
Yes?
Yeah. No. I want you to feel your bees
lower.
Okay?
Okay.
All right. Just open your chakra. Just open your chakra. No, your chakra. Here. Here. Just release from within. That's okay. That's it. Yeah, release.
Okay.
Open. Share yourself. Now open your mouth wide. Stick your tongue all the way out. That's it. Great. Now breathe in deep. Breathe out deep. Inhalation deep. Exhalation. Yes. Breathe it in and breathe it out. That's it. That's great. That's great. That's great.
I feel sick.
Okay. All right. Okay. Look. Okay. Let's not waste time. Look. Just play B flat instead of B. Okay? B flat. Yeah. Yeah, always B flat. B flat. Breathe, breathe. Exactly which part of B flat do you not understand? B flat!
That's drawn me to your work is that I love doing comedy with music. But are you ever in the kind of more satirical mode where you actually want to bring down
absolutely
a style or
absolutely a style. But we don't pinpoint it.
For whatever reason we've tried not to pinpoint people because
so we don't mention names, we won't say we're making fun of this particular person or this particular style or this but we'll still do it, those who get it, and we'll try to write it in such a way that even those who don't know would get it.
And in a way, actually, when in a good parody, one should sometimes have the feeling like, "Wow, that's like really good." That's like, when it's a musical parody, it's like, "Wow, that's actually beautiful playing."
Yeah, well, remember we were talking last night about Dudley Moore
yes.
and Beyond the Fringe, and
yes.
his parodies of. Beethoven and Benjamin
hilarious.
Britten.
But they're brilliant as well. They're brilliant musically. Yes. I would listen to that as a composition.
Right.
We pay homage, actually, to Dudley Moore as well. In A Little Nightmare Music, we also have a grand finale based on his finale. We take it further.
This unending series of chords. Beethoven's Fifth Symphony.
Right. The
unending coda.
Exactly. Yeah. So we've actually transcribed that, but for violin and piano, and, you know, made it a lot more physical than what he does. But because as well, we love that music.
Right.
Could you scratch me just there? Oh, it's better. A little lower. Just a little lower. Not that low!
Has then such an institution as these great orchestras behind you, then it gives you another power and another stamp of approval in a way. And we think that's a wonderful thing, because then the audience feels, okay, well, if this great maestro or orchestra or whatever approves this, then I guess it is okay to laugh in the concert hall, and it is okay to be silly,
to make fun of yourself.
Do you have some kind of dream to put your own orchestra together?
Well, it's basically, we've collected 16 musicians from all over the world, and they are superheroes. They are not just super musicians, but they each have at least one super skill. One of them can fly. We have like acrobatic violinists. We have a fire-eating violinist. We have a bass player who does flamenco.
Dancing at the same time.
Same time as singing and playing the double bass.
We have a
beatboxing flutist, etc., etc., etc.
We have some of the violinists are extraordinary dancers and are able to dance and play the violin at the same time. So we thought, how can we have a show that truly reflects all the madness that is inside of our head? So we decided to form the League of Extraordinary Musicians.
The League of Extraordinary Musicians will debut in Vienna on New Year's Eve 2014. The orchestra sounds like it's going to be a wonderfully subversive addition to the world of concertos, symphonies, and farting bassoons. All there is left to say to Goodisman and Jew is bravissimo!
Everybody, la 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 la
This is Tony Hendra. We'll be back after this.
And now, some more of the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Dude, it was so weird. I found all this porn on my brother's computer. No chicks at all, just men making love to men. What do you think that means?
You think it could be gay?
Jason? Gay? But he doesn't show the warning signs. I mean, he doesn't even have AIDS.
Do you have to have AIDS to be gay? Isn't it, like, optional now?
No, I think that's only in Canada.
Still, you remember when he brought that dude from his Pilates class to your sister's wedding?
Oh, yeah, Steve. I like that guy.
And your dad got all upset when they held hands.
Yeah. You think that means anything?
I don't know all the rules or anything, but dating a dude might be enough. Maybe you should just ask him.
I did. He said, "How many times do I have to tell you? I enjoy sex with other men. You've met like four of my boyfriends."
Huh. So, you think he's gay?
It's just hard to say. I mean, hey, look, I'm cool with it. I keep an open mind. I tried beating off to the gay porn. I was pretty good, you know, but I don't know. A lot of the guys weren't even that good looking.
You beat off to gay porn?
Well, it's not like I'm attracted to it. It's just beating off. It doesn't mean anything. It's like when I go down on Pete from the office in the parking garage after work.
Dude, you think you might be gay?
Come on. Me? Gay? I hate NPR.
Still, all your brother did was jerk off to gay porn and date a dude and boom, he was gay.
Yeah, so he says. You're telling me that all it takes to be gay is sexual attraction to other men? Come on.
But why would he make that up?
Maybe he just probably needed, like, a break from getting too much pussy, you know? Like that dude, I don't know, John Waters.
Or Alan Cumming.
Right. Anyway, I can't be gay. I'm married, and my wife is super hot. She's got a nice, firm ass, a broad, muscular back, a full, thick beard.
Full beard?
Yeah. You know, dude, that shit is so thick and lustrous, it connects all the way down to her chest hair. And she's storing some major sausage down in the cellar, if you know what I mean.
Your wife has a dick?
Yeah, bro, what else would she have?
Dude, do you think you might be gay and married to a guy?
Are you kidding me? All I listen to is classic rock. Morrissey, David Bowie. I mean, Queen, for God's sake.
Still, I don't know all the rules or anything, but blowing dudes and being married to someone with a beard and a dick might be enough to make you gay.
Oh, man, I can't be gay. How would I face my brother?
Dude, he's an open-minded guy. Maybe he'll understand.
No, you obviously don't know Jason. Him and his buddy Steve, the guy he brought to my sister's wedding, they're a couple of real straight arrows. They couldn't handle this.
I'm here for you, dude. Come here and let me hold you. We'll think of something.
Mm-hmm. Your hands are pretty warm, Broseph.
Hi, I got my foot stuck in a bear trap, and I could really use your help. I can't go to the emergency room because I'm holed up in these woods hiding from my wife.
You never should have come here in these parts.
Huh?
I get the jawbones. Yee-hurry, Zechariah, we got us another one.
You never should have come around here in these parts, interrupting me during the chicken ritual. Hi, Ma.
No, I'm your Ma.
You're my Ma?
Yeah!
I still have a bear trap stuck to my foot. Are you even qualified to do this?
Frog spit. We're fully qualified for any sort of healing here. Nurse Lizzie, please fetch my assistant.
He's, get your smelly butt in here and tell the others.
This here's my half-wit brother. He's the shame of the family.
And also a highly qualified surgical assistant. Say howdy, Dr. Zug.
Well, what do we got here? Looks like one of them survivalists. You never should have come around these parts.
I'm Eric Freen. I shot two Pennsylvania state policemen, and I've been on the run ever since. You guys will recognize me from the news?
Hell no! We ain't got no telly nor internuts up here. Except for that old radio over there in the corner. It ain't worked since before the war. Now, excuse me, but for a moment while I confer with my associate, Dr. Zug! Hey, Zug.
Yeah.
He's wearing a diaper.
Yeah, I know. He looks like a big baby.
Well, let's see what we got here. Uh-oh. Guess we're gonna have to amputate.
Oh, God, does that mean I have gangrene?
Hell no. We're just going to amputate.
Oh, that's it. You people are just nothing but a bunch of inbred hayseeds with no qualifications or proper hygienics. I'm turning myself into the authorities.
Goose grease!
Kill them and eat them!
For the final edition radio hour, Will Durst here with a few choice words about all the uproar concerning the long overdue Republican reforms calling for citizens to produce a government-issued ID before they can vote. Oh, for crumb's sake, people, settle down. It's an ID. You need one to fly or even to take out a library book. What is wrong with ensuring the integrity of the electoral process? This isn't voter suppression, it's voter protection. And no, we can't find more than 30 examples of voter fraud over the last 15 years, but that doesn't mean it isn't happening. You can't see gravity either, but all your liberal scientists pretty much agree that that's going on all the time, right? Besides, who doesn't have a driver's license? Do you really want people who can't drive to be able to vote? Have you taken a bus lately? What's next? You gonna open voting up to homeless people? You know what they're going to vote for? Free pints of vodka. And yes, we're also trying to reduce the abuses caused by early voting. Why? Because it's un-American to make it so easy to vote. That's why. Perhaps voting on a Tuesday is inconvenient for you. Well, nobody said democracy was supposed to be convenient. You might want to think about moving to North Korea. They only have one name on the ballot there. Doesn't get much more convenient than that. When it comes right down to it, maybe it's time we go back to only letting white male landowners vote. After all, they're the ones who run the country, and they could pay for the privilege. And the more money they spend, the more votes they get. Eventually, the guy with the most money would end up running stuff. That's the way they used to do it in Europe, and they turned out okay. Except for a few archdukes and the Russian Romanovs, that is. Yeah, for the final edition radio hour, I'm Will Durst.
The final edition has been brought to you by the new Ebola. Like the Ebola, but without the viruses.
Hi-yo!
The final edition radio hour is performed at one time or another by Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hindra, Jeff Hendrick, Kevin Janis, Jeff Chrysler, Barry Link, John Marshall, Ebby Parker, Rachel Rausch, Steve Rosenfield, David Espridge, Andrew Danish, Leslie Shapira, Anne Tuchel, and Darby Worley. The show is written at one time or another by Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hindra, Jeff Hendrick, Jeff Chrysler, David Espridge, Barry Link, John Marshall, Ebby Parker, Leslie Shapira, and Steve Rosenfield. The final edition is produced and directed by Tony Hindra and Jeff Chrysler. West Coast production by Barry Lank. Audio editing and production by Greg Russ and Andrew Hammond. The final edition radio hour is the property of the Final Edition LLC. Copyright 2014.